the intention of finding some awe or the finding some humor that every day when you wake up, and I can almost guarantee if you keep that intention in front of you, you will find it.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Alan Klein is an award-winning keynote speaker, best-selling author, and jollytologist who shows people how humor can help them heal their lives. In 1974, Alan's 34-year-old wife fell ill and died. He learned to process his grief using humor. In 1989, he published The Healing Power of Humor, Techniques for Getting Through Loss, Setbacks, Upsets, Disappointments, Difficulties, Trials, Tribulations, and All That Not-So-Funny Stuff. Since then, Alan has published many books, including The Courage to Laugh, and his most recent book, The Awe Factor, How a Little Bit of Wonder Can Make a Big Difference in Your Life. In 2009, Alan was awarded the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor. So I'm here with Alan Klein, jollytologist and author of The Healing Power of Humor. I'm excited to have you, Alan. Yay.
So, thank you. And many other books, too.
And many other books. Yes. Thank you for that. And I also watched your TED Talk on intention.
Intention. Yeah. Power of intention. Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. So, Alan, as an author, kind of tell us how you arrived in this space as a writer of inspirational literature.
Well, I realize when I go way back that in grade school, PS64 in the Bronx, New York, I wrote a poem. And I was asked to recite it in one of the assemblies. And I still remember the principal was Mrs. Storm. And there was another vice principal or something. And I kind of remember part of the poem, like, Mrs. Storm has been great and Mrs. So-and-so has been, and it was like a 5-6 line poem. And so, if I really look back, and I'm glad you asked that question because I haven't thought about that moment till now.
Yeah.
But I think that was maybe the beginning of being an author, but I didn't write much after that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So when did you pick up writing again?
Well, that all started, my wife died at the age of 34 of a rare liver disease.
Wow.
And she had a great sense of humor. And I noticed after she died, it was very serious time, but we often laughed, there were laughter and tears. Mm-hmm. And so we would laugh together. And after she died, I looked back and I went, those moments, people don't talk about those moments. But it was those moments that really helped me get through that difficult situation. Mm. And it was those moments that I remember the sad times, but that didn't help me heal. It was the remembering the happier moments, the times we laughed together, that helped me heal. And it was also a time when Norman Cousins was writing about how he healed himself with laughter and humor, also with a very rare disease. And so I just start thinking about that more. I just start documenting my own experience. And I went back to school to get a master's in human development. And it turned into my first book, The Healing Power of Humor.
Wow. What was that master's degree in? What is it called?
It was an independent degree study from Winona, Minnesota, St. Mary's College, or now St. Mary's University. And it was in Masters of Human,
Human.
HUMAN development.
Oh, HUM. Human
How about
development.
human development? So,
Oh.
yeah, not humor.
I'm a little slow, Alan. I thought you were saying human. Human. And I was like,
Human,
what is.
yeah, HUMAN.
Yeah, I thought you were saying it with the Y, like
Oh, I
YUMAN.
see.
I was like, what is that?
No,
Okay,
no.
human development. Oh, that's cool. Okay.
So basically, I can pick my subject, anything that fell under human development, which was like almost anything, right? And I had to find an advisor, and I really lucked out because one of the leading researchers in therapeutic humor was a professor at Stanford University, and I live in California, not too far from Stanford. So I live in San Francisco. So he became my advisor on my project, on my thesis. And basically, the way the book came about is I had to give a 3-hour colloquium. I actually did not have to write a thesis. So I thought if I'm going to do a 3-hour presentation, I want to get paid for it. And so I wrote to all the schools that gave Saturday continuing education programs and said I had an all-day workshop on the healing power of humor. I did not. I maybe had, a couple of hours of material, but three of the schools hired me to do I knew it was a hot topic because they gave me a room that held 40 people, my very first ever workshop, and there was 60 people in it, crammed in it. And I just knew that it was a hot topic. And so I started to write about it, interview people. That was a beginning of a whole new career.
That's a great story. And I think a lot of people, when we feel sad or upset, the last thing we really think about is humor. Like, sometimes we can get so bogged down in the emotion of sadness or anger that we don't even want to think about laughing. Like sometimes it seems like that's just the wrong thing to do. But I've learned that laughter really is the best medicine. Like it's just amazing how much better I feel if I have a good laugh.
When I need a little humor, I always put this on and look in the mirror. It's hard to say serious like this. And in fact, in my programs, my workshops, my keynote speeches, we do a whole process with this. And people don't, I give each person one of these, although they don't know what it is. It's in a little paper wrapping. And then I tell them to think about some little stress or worry or concern they may be having in their life. And then with their eyes closed, put this on. And once it's on their nose, open their eyes and look around the room. And what happens is everybody starts laughing, chuckling, smiling. And then I say, what happened to the stress you were just thinking about? And they say, it's gone. So it's a silly little thing, but it's so amazing. I've gotten such incredible stories about in the business world, people, some companies will use this to start a business meeting, and it kind of lightens the mood. Well, one couple said they bought a dozen of these and they put them around the house. And whenever one of them starts getting angry with the other, one of them puts this on and the anger dissipates.
Hilarious. I love that.
Another mother said she wakes her kids up wearing this.
Oh, so my gosh.
They don't want to get out of bed, but they start laughing and it just kind of
That's helps. Great.
Yeah.
You know, Alan, I think that sometimes the humor is kind of beaten out of us. Like if we're always, especially when we're growing up in school, we have to take everything seriously and there's no time. Don't be silly. Stop being silly. Yeah. Stop playing around. Right. And
wipe that smirk off your face.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's knocked out of us. Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's exactly what we need. Like that's such a lifesaver.
Right. And we don't let kids, you know, be kids, I think.
Right.
My wife had this incredible thought, and I don't know scientifically how true it is, but I know in my life it's true. And she said, what we don't get when we're younger, we often get when we're older. So I was a very serious child. I mean, it's hard to believe now, but now is kind of my childhood.
Yeah,
which I didn't get when I was growing up. So it's never too late to be a child again.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's never too late. Yeah, and Alan, so in the healing process, like after your wife passed away, and you thought about all of the laughter and the good times, did you use writing at all to kind of process your grief? Along with the
I did. In fact, the healing power of humor was going to be learning to laugh when you feel like crying, and it was all going to be about the proposal I did was all about humor in death, dying, and grief. And the publisher, major publisher, said we'd like to buy the book. We'd like you to write the book, but you've got to expand it. It's too narrow a focus, too narrow an audience.
Yeah.
And so we decided to do The Healing Power of Humor, although the very last part is the, like, to die laughing. It's about humor and grief. In the dying, death and dying process. Here's a chapter I call Less of a Grave Matter. It was kind of, I know the third part here. I called it The Last Laugh. But then for me, that wasn't enough. I really wanted a whole book on that process. Yeah. And what I realized is when my wife was dying and I was grieving, I looked for books about grief.
Uh-huh.
And there was no internet then. And I looked for books. And what I found was most grief books told me how bad I'm going to feel.
Right.
How I may lose my appetite. I may be depressed. I may not sleep well. And I thought, I don't need to hear that. I was going through some of that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought, I want to write a book that will lift up people that are grieving. So down the road, I wrote another book, and let me, here we go. It's Embracing Life After Loss. And I basically laid out the 5 steps of going through loss to laughter. So it's like losing, learning, because I think one of the greatest teachers is when someone close to us dies and we could learn about life and love and compassion and living life more fully. So it's losing, learning, letting go. We've got to let go of the grief to move on. And then finally living our life again, and finally allowing the laughter.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because so it's a process. It's not like you lose someone and then you're just like laughing the next day. Like you have to work, get there. No. Yeah.
Although, you know, there's, I said laughter and tears are very close. At funerals, often, you know, you can't tell what's laughter and tears sometimes.
Yes.
Mary Tyler Moore has that Chuckles the Clown scene where she's laughing and crying. And people think she's crying, but she's laughing so hard. So often, you know, the reason for that is absurd. You know, part of comedy is absurdity. If you think of how do comedians get us to laugh, they often exaggerate a situation, becomes absurd, and we start to laugh. So, you know, at funerals, often people look in the coffin and go, oh, they never look so well. They never look so good. Or I heard of a priest who a new priest, and went up to the coffin and said, well, folks, you know, the insides are already gone. This is just the shell. Right. The nut is already gone.
Right.
Something like that. You know. So we say stupid things. You know. And so it's time to laugh. And I think people feel guilty about laughing at those times. But
I was going to ask, because I think that's very true. I think that a lot of people do feel like they have no right to be laughing after something tragic has happened. Did you feel that at all during your loss? Did you feel guilty?
You know, looking back, I don't think so. Because as you said, you feel better when you're laughing.
Right.
There was some instinctive things that were happening when I lost my wife, and I think I was honoring her actually by laughing, because she had a great sense of humor, and we would laugh a lot together. And so, without actually verbalizing this, I think I was actually honoring her. And I honor her every time I write about her or talk about her in my workshops and keynotes. You know, I have a whole story about her and the laughter that we had there. And so it's honoring her and keeping her memory alive.
I love that. So the humor, using the humor to get to the grievance process, is honoring her. That's very well said. I love that. Yeah.
You know, you're amazing. You're drawing out of me stuff that I've never put in words before.
Oh, wow.
And I've been doing this for years, but I never realized how much honor and keeping her alive. And you know, I think that's, people do mourn, and yes, it's important to grieve, but I think the more we can talk about the person that died, or the what they've given us, or what we've learned for them, or they used to do, you know, holidays come up, they used to do this. It's keeping them alive in some levels.
It is. And you know what? I think that's what they would want. I think they would want you to be laughing about all the happy memories than crying all the time. Of course, you need to cry, and of course, that's totally necessary. But I think they would really want you to feel the happiness.
You're so right, because in some of my books, I interviewed people that were grieving, and I said, you know, how would you want your loved one to feel after they've died? And most of them said, they'd want me to go on with my life and enjoy life and be happy.
Yes, yes. And you know, I just wrote a piece about one of my mentor teachers. Her name was Miss Walker, and she passed away a few years ago. She was like 80 something, but she wanted her funeral to be this celebration of life instead of this grieving space. So she had, I think she was cremated, but she had a picture of herself like up front, like smiling, looking happy. And the church was packed, and people got up and they started telling all these stories about her. And there was so much laughter. And that was the best funeral. Actually, her husband had a really good funeral too. I know it's weird to say funerals were good. Her husband had a really good funeral. Because it was the same thing. And I walked out of that funeral thinking and feeling like, oh my gosh, this was wonderful. I love Miss Walker. This is wonderful.
Yeah. I've told people I love bubbles because bubbles remind me of each bubble is like an individual person. They're shimmering and glowing and different sizes and shapes. And they're there one moment and gone the next. So I want everyone to have a jar of bubbles that after the funeral to blow bubbles. I'm known for my, I don't have one on right now, but my colorful ties.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, men don't wear ties today, but when I go to Unity Spiritual Center every Sunday and I wear another tie. And so I want everyone, all my ties laid out, and I want people to take a tie home when they're, when they leave.
Yeah.
And I also love Broadway musicals. So
I love Broadway too. Oh my gosh.
I grew up on Broadway. I grew up in New York City. So,
of course. Yeah.
I want upbeat Broadway music.
Yes.
At my service.
Yes. Oh my goodness. You know what I like to do, Alan, is if I'm feeling really sad or really down, I like to play The Wiz. Like Ease On Down the Road. I love that. It's just a, or Don't Nobody Bring Me No Bad News. I'm like,
yeah. And I'm always singing Broadway songs, but I make up my own lyrics, like to what's happening, you know, whatever is happening. That, and it really uplifts me. It just, it's amazing. And,
It is.
Yeah. Oh, we could talk a lot about Broadway. I was opening night. I was in the audience of Hello, Dolly. Like that. I've lots of Broadway stories. Scenery fall in shows. I've seen actors forget their lines.
Oh, my goodness. Who was playing Dolly?
I used to work in the intermission in the lobby selling grape juice at My Fair Lady for many years.
What?
I made money to work my way through college doing that.
That's what, you know, Alan, I majored in music. So, I know a lot of the, and actually I had to perform like Wouldn't It Be Lovely. That was like one of my recital performances from My Fair Lady. So, yeah, I love it. Yeah.
You still do music?
I teach English now, so I'm not really, I need to get back into it. I haven't sung in a while, and you know, your vocal cords are just muscles, so they're very out of shape, so I need to get them back. But I still love listening. I have so many musical soundtracks, and I love watching musicals, and I don't
have
get to
two boxes. I sold my whole record collection, but I kept the two boxes of record, Broadway records.
Wow.
So I have right over there is two boxes. Some of them autographed. I don't know quite what to do with them. The record stores don't seem to want to buy a Broadway show.
So. I don't know why. I don't get that. But you know what? This reminds me of the healing power of music too. Right? Like humor is very healing. And music is very healing. And I think that there's something that's so universal about the two, because with humor, everybody laughs, and you can, like with the red nose, like you could speak different languages, have a whole bunch of people speaking different languages in a room. You guys put on the red nose, everyone laughs, right? It's just so universal. And even with music, I mean, music is so, like, people around the world know the same songs, and it's just this shared sense of kinship that really just brings people together. It's very healing.
Amazing. And what about funny Broadway musicals? I mean, we can put the both together. Like one of my funniest ever was what is it? On the Way to the Forum. Funny thing happened on the Way to the Forum.
I was gonna say,
I mean, from the very first moment, he says curtain going up, and the whole front curtain falls. You know that instant, that's going to be funny.
Yes, yes. That's very true. There are a lot of humorous musicals. And you know what else I like to do? Okay, so this is what I learned in my 20s. After a breakup, I had a friend suggest, just watch a romantic comedy and you'll feel much more better. And so I started watching romantic comedies after my breakups, and I would laugh so much. I would have forgotten about the guy after I'm finished with the movie. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, and I have like one movie I have seen 12 times, and I laugh at the same scenes every single time. Just thinking about it now, I'm laughing. And the movie is Woody Allen's A Sleeper.
Oh, I was going to say, I love Woody Allen. I don't think I've seen Sleeper, though.
Oh, my God. It's set in the future. And my favorite part is that, well, there's several favorite parts, but he's in the future, they grow fruit and vegetables that is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
So you see like a 20-foot banana.
Is that one in black and white?
I don't remember. I blank out even the color. I just laugh. And
yeah.
Even before the scene happens, I'm laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just talking to someone the other day about Annie Hall. That's like my favorite Woody Allen film. I just laugh all the time when I see that. That's great.
Yeah. Oh my God. So again, fine. You know, one of the keys to getting more humor, I like the props, like the clown nose, but...
Yeah.
Find a movie, a TV show, and you know, that helps you to laugh, and just watch it more. Or watch.
Yes.
I could see any Woody Allen, even his serious ones, and there's something that just I'm attuned to. So,
You know what else is good? If you use YouTube and you find funny bloopers, I've done that before, and it just makes me laugh.
Right.
Like clips of comedians, their shticks or whatever they, you know, they're.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful. Okay. So yeah, give us some more tips, Alan. Okay. So we can use the red nose, movies. We can go on YouTube and find other things. Like what are some other things we can do to bring more humor in our lives?
Have a humor buddy. Like my daughter and I, I'd say we laugh every time we're together.
Yes.
And sometimes it's just silly humor. Yeah. I mean, we could, when she was younger, we'd go walking down the street. We live in San Francisco, so it's a big city, and there'd be parking meters. And if we hear a car go by playing some music or some singer singing, we'd go to the parking meter, make believe it's a microphone, and we would start singing.
That is hilarious.
You know, just to have a play buddy, a humor buddy.
What about dance?
Oh my God, I'm a disco queen. I used to love disco. In fact, in the disco era, you know, they used to close at 2 a.m. So my friend and I, there used to be an underground disco that would be open. They couldn't serve drinks or anything, but they'd be open till 6 a.m. And we would stay there till 6, 5:30 maybe. It's just so uplifting, so incredible.
You know what movie that reminds me of, Alan?
Yeah?
Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, one of my favorite movies. Yes.
Yeah.
You know what? You just maybe I should have disco music at my funeral.
Yes. With a disco ball.
Oh, and everyone dances afterwards. Oh, I have to put that on the list.
Oh, yeah. That would be amazing. You know, when you were talking about you and your daughter and the parking meter and the microphone, it reminded me, because I talk with a few people about the importance of bringing play back into our lives. We don't really play, like what you said with bubbles. I had another guest that talked about how fun it is just to blow bubbles or to do puzzles or, you know, play Twister, whatever. Just bringing that back into your life can really
The kind of play you're talking about, because we consider football games and baseball games and basketball games as play.
Yeah.
But they're so competitive, you know, and there's so much anger if your team doesn't win, and you know, to me that's not play,
right? Yeah, no,
or not help. It's play, but it's not helpful play,
right?
It's not in. You know, it's okay for the winning team, but the losing team is feeling depressed, and
right? Yeah,
not healthy play.
Right, yeah. But just sometimes just like getting Play-Doh and making stuff.
Oh, yeah.
My family,
Yeah.
I kind of, oh, this is a thing I miss about like ever since COVID, but my family, we would always get together and just play board games, and they would be the most fun. We'd have so much like charades and oh my
Oh,
gosh. I
yeah.
love that. Yeah.
So I think, pictures, I don't have it right here, but when my daughter was a teenager, she wanted a cream pie thrown in her face.
Oh
She kept, "Dad, I want a cream." So she, one year, in the summer, she got off the camp bus, and there were 40 of her friends, on the bus, and I had a cream face. I have a photo, but it's way over there.
Yeah.
I just look at that photo and I smile. I laugh
Oh my
because it
gosh.
brings back that moment. So have a photo that lifts you up, that helps you to lighten up or laugh. Or pets, pet. I had a dog that was a golden retriever, and he liked tennis balls. And so I was watching the tennis match on TV, and he was watching with me. And then the ball, went off the screen, and he went behind the TV to see where the ball was. So pets are great.
That is so funny. Yeah, pets are
Here's
wonderful.
my current dog,
Oh.
although she's a little older. This is when she was younger,
Oh my
but
goodness, how adorable.
so and she helps me to laugh too a lot.
Yes, I think pet dogs are one great for that. Oh my gosh. And they're so happy to see you all the time. Like, you
Yeah,
know, it's like you walk in the door and they give you a round of applause every time you walk in the door. It's just wonderful.
I know it's and and it could be 10 times a day, and they'll still do
Yeah,
it every time.
exactly. You know, it just
Yeah.
another thing I think that's important, because now that we're talking about just with family, and I remember at one of my, I think it was my aunt's birth. Oh yeah, so at my aunt's birthday every year, everyone goes around and kind of shares a favorite memory about her. While and she's living, like this is not like you know she like while she's living, let's share our favorite memory. And I think that's just a great exercise to really celebrate that person while they're alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so important.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, because they're not going to hear it when they're dead. So,
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
So tell us about, because you also call yourself an ambassador of light. Is that tied into your bringing humor to people? Is the light the humor you bring?
Well, I realized I did a process a couple of months ago where you do a vision board. You I have it up here. And my board had all these light symbols, Christmas lights, lights, hanging lamps, lights, candles, gold foil, just what else? Let me look. strings of lights, just all kinds of, and radiating light coming from the sun. And I realized what I've been doing for the last 20 more than, probably almost 30 years is showing people how to lighten up. Whether it's in the death and dying process, whether it's adding more humor, whether it's showing, one of my books is You Can't Ruin My Day. And my latest book, The Awe Factor, which shows people how to get more awe in their life, because
Yes. Oh, okay. We have to
that
talk
there's
about that too.
incredible stuff all around us. So I realized I'm really the ambassador of light. And I didn't tell that to anyone. That was like looking at that vision board, that was who I was. And I do say I'm a jollytologist to people, but I don't advertise ambassador of light. And then I was at a Sunday service at Unity one Sunday, and this woman who only had been coming a couple of months came up to me and she said, "Every time around you, I feel really good." She said, "You are like the ambassador of light."
Oh, wow.
And I got the chills. It was an awe moment for me, actually, because I got the chills that I hadn't told anyone about it. And there she said it. So I started to add that to my who I am.
Yeah, that's I love that story.
Ambassador of light.
Yes. And I like the imagery. I like, because light can have two meanings. When you, when you say you show people how to lighten up, like lighten up as in stress, like just let go, relax. And then lighten up as in like let your joy shine, let your happiness shine, let you let the life flow through you. It's just that's
because it's so amazing, so contagious. I have friends, a couple of friends. One is severely depressed. One just told me how he's down in the dumps, and and I realize the energy they're putting out. It's like people don't want to be around them.
Yeah.
So it's like this spiral. You know, one was complaining they don't have friends. In fact, both of them have very few friends.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's because of that. Yes. And so even if they have to fake a little of that lightness, it may help them to rise above it.
Yeah.
To attract happier people. It's like I believe in gratitude. I'm very grateful for so many things in my life, and I honor that a lot. But I realize the more I'm grateful for the stuff in my life, the more stuff comes into my life for which I am grateful. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? But if you lighten up, your life will be lighter. People will be around you more. They'll help you to be happier. You will be happier. You know, and that's why I think volunteering is so important to helping other people. You know, I help people by writing and doing programs like this, and I'm grateful to you, Ebony, for producing something like this. So, because if I've helped one person, I felt I have done my job for the day or the week or the month, even.
Yes.
So just giving to others, I think, is one way of lightening up and helping you, actually helping yourself.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you mentioned kind of like fake it till you make it with the happiness, I was trying to think of the name of the book while you were talking, but it was really popular maybe almost about 10 years ago. It was written by a Harvard professor. It's something, The Happiness Factor, or I can't remember, but he talks about how to cultivate, how important happiness is in your life and how to cultivate it. But well, there's one exercise I did. Oh my gosh. And it really helped because I was feeling very frustrated with teaching and everything. So he said, force yourself to smile and hold it. And if you can't, put like a pen, like, right? And I did that and it worked.
It worked. Yeah.
It was amazing.
I often have done that in my workshop because I have a whole little piece about smiling, but you just.
Yes.
Smiling and then just take it out and then keep that. Keep that smiling position. Yeah. And it works. It really works. Yeah.
It does.
You know, I know who you're talking about, and I think he's even given me a.
Sean Acor's his name.
Yes, thank you. He's giving me a quote for one. Here, Sean Acor, right in the back of You Can't Ruin My Day. Right there is his testimonial.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love his work. Yeah, yes. Sean Acor. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can remember I did it actually when I was sitting in traffic. That's a great time to do it because you're so, especially here in California, oh my God, Los Angeles. So I was sitting in traffic and I just was like this, and I'm sure I looked really creepy, but I felt really good. I didn't feel nearly as stressed out. So, yeah.
Yeah. But. And you know what? And some people, you know, my workshops, you know, I can't do that. You know, one mother said, I can't laugh with my kid because then I can't discipline them. Hmm. And I thought, it's just the opposite, lady, you know? You're going to bond with your kid if you're laughing together, and they'll want to do more for you. So a lot of people, you know, well, I can't do this. I'm an executive, you know.
Right, yeah.
if you're, you know, go in your office and shut the door and do it.
Right.
No one will know why you're smiling all day. But just push a little to get a little more of that lightness, that humor, that smiling in your life.
Yeah, you know, I think, Ellen, that some people see humor and laughter as weakness. Like, you can't, that's not, you have to be tough and stern and super serious. And if you even smile a little, it's like.
It's actually not, because Viktor Frankl, who was in a concentration camp, talks about finding some humor every single day, as little as it was, because it helped him get through that situation.
Mm.
And he said, the only thing we really have to control any situation, and I can't even fathom how he could laugh in a concentration camp.
Yeah,
but he said it changed his attitude, and that's the only thing we really have, is our attitude to rise above any situation. And I think doing these little, what may people may say, stupid things, silly things, changes our attitude.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. Yeah. And it does, and it has a ripple effect. So once I started the forced smiling, I felt a lot more lighter at work. I was laughing more. The kids appreciated me more, right? I felt happier. So I felt like going out with my friends more. And it's like this snowball of happiness.
You're right. It's a ripple effect. And, you know, I wish I had a magic wand that I can wave it over my two depressed friends, but I can't. And, you know, I suggest things, and sometimes they'll take it. Most of the times they won't.
It can be difficult.
We do what we can do.
Yeah. In that space of depression, it can be because you're just, I think, as I said in the beginning, you're just so, that's all you can see is the darkness around you. And it's sometimes you just need someone there to help inject some levity or some, you know, some humor or something. You just need someone to reach out and help pull you, because by yourself, it can be very difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one of those people I talked about, one of my friends, recently, the only time I've seen him really, anxious to get out of bed in the morning was when he was volunteering with students to show them various things on the computer, because he's really good with Apple computers particularly.
And
he was so excited about doing that every day, but then the volunteer position ended and so he went back down again. But it showed me how helping others really helps yourself.
Right. And that just reminded me of when I was about 13 years old, I was very unhappy, like really. There was a lot happening. And it was a school night and I was feeling down. And my friend called me because she needed help on her math. I don't know why she was calling me for help on math, because I'm not good at math. But we had so much fun. We laughed so much. I felt so much better. I don't even know if I remembered how I felt prior to her phone call. But so even just, helping. So she called me for help, and I guess I helped her, but she really helped me to feel better.
If people, you know, listening to us, if they just be a little lighter with other people, it's going to help them, and it will really help yourself, too, to lighten up.
Yes, yes. Ellen, this has been a wonderful, happy, jolly conversation.
Yeah,
tell us where
we can
find you.
Oh, on the internet, allenklein.com, but you got to spell it right, allenklein.com, and my website is www.allenklein.com. Or Amazon has all my books. My latest one, The Awe Factor, that was just named one of the best spiritual books of last year, 2020.
Yes,
so,
that's wonderful.
And was mentioned mentioned in the New York Times a week ago Sunday. So
really,
I am a happy camper.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
Yes. Thank you.
Alan, do you have any closing words of wisdom or encouragement for our audience, particularly for people who are feeling a little sad?
Feeling sad. Well, we didn't get to talk much about this book, but I know if you're feeling sad, like people with COVID now that like only looked at some of the negative things, there is positive awe stuff, wonder stuff around you. Mm-hmm. What we didn't get into the studies. If you just have the intention, this goes back to my TEDx talk, have the intention of finding some awe or the finding some humor that every day when you wake up. And I can almost guarantee if you keep that intention in front of you, you will find it.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Alan. I feel better having talked with you. It's amazing.
Ebony, you are awesome. Thank you. I love it.
I seriously felt so much happier after having that conversation with Alan, just in talking about humor. I think when you talk about humor, it's pretty hard not to laugh. And I was laughing throughout the interview and just having so much fun sharing about what makes me feel better. And there's so much power in laughter. I mean, I truly believe it really is the best medicine. So if you want to learn more about Alan Klein and the healing power of humor, then please visit his website. I have some links also to some of his books in the show notes. And kind of dive into that whole topic, because it's amazing how something that we typically deem as frivolous and childish and, you know, waste of my time is the answer to so much heartbreak. So in the meantime, also check out my website, zazo.com, and sign up for my weekly newsletter. You can follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous guest. All right. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.